Number 1. Mary, that's beautiful. How is John?
Thank you, he's fine. As a matter of fact, I'm a little worried. I think John will raise the roof as soon as he sees the bill for this month's expenses.
Why is Mary worried? Number 2. Carol, tell me about how you spent your time today.
Oh, Dad. I began studying at 8 and finished at 5 with 1 hour for lunch in between. I'm exhausted now.
For how many hours did Carol study?
Number 3. Have you seen the film The Coal Miner's Daughter? It's a film nobody should miss.
I've been trying to get a ticket, but I can't.
What can we infer from the dialogue? Number 4. Oh, God. How did you spend the money I gave you just now?
The shirt cost me $40. Then I spent $3 seeing a film and $15 for lunch. Oh, I nearly forgot that I just gave a $4 tip. Now there's only $3 left.
How much did the woman give the boy?
Number 5. Why don't we stop for some ice cream after the play?
I'd love to, but I'm on a diet.
What does the man ask the woman to do? Number 6. I do like those colourful birds. I think you can teach them to talk.
Yes, but they are too expensive. Frankly, I'd rather buy a parrot here.
Where did this conversation probably take place?
Number 7. Are you ready to leave?
Just a second. I need to put my camera in the suitcase.
What does the man imply?
Number 8. Jane, we are going to see Mary. Would you like to go with us?
Yes, but I'll make a call to my husband first.
What will the woman probably do at once? Number 9. Let's go into the waiting room now. It's already 8:30.
No need to hurry. We still have 40 minutes before the plane takes off.
When will the plane take off? Number 10. Now, what seems to be the trouble, Mr. Smith?
I've been very tired lately, and last night I had a bad headache.
What's the probable relationship between the two speakers? Passage 1. Mark Twain, who wrote the story we are going to read, travelled quite a lot, often because of circumstances, usually financial circumstances, forced him to. He was born in Florida, Massiel area, in 1835, and then moved to Hannibal, Massiel area, with his family when he was 4 years old. Most people think he was born in Hannibal, but that isn't true. After his father died when he was about 12, Twain worked in Hannibal for a while, and then left so he could earn more money. He worked for a while as a typesetter on various newspapers, and then got a job as a river pilot on the Mississippi. Twain loved this job, and many of his books show it. The river job didn't last, however, because of the outbreak of the Civil War. Twain was in the army for just 2 weeks, and then he and the whole company went to the West to get away from the war and the army. In Nevada and California, Twain prospected for silver and gold without much luck, but did succeed as a writer. Once that happened, Twain travelled around the country giving lectures and earning enough money to go to Europe. Twain didn't travel much the last 10 years of his life, and he didn't publish much either. Somehow his travels, even when forced, inspired his writings. Like many popular writers, Twain derived much of the materials for his writing from his own personal experiences. Number 11. The speaker focuses on which aspects of Mark Twain's life? Number 12. Where do most people think Twain was born? Number 13. Why did Twain go to the West? Number 14. What connection does the lecturer suggest between Twain's travels and his writings?
Passage 2. When train fares went up for the third time in 1 year, I decided to buy a motorbike to go to work. My idea was that although I would have to pay for tax, insurance and petrol, I would still spend less than on train tickets over the year. I might even save time on my journey from home to work. So I bought a small second-hand Japanese motorbike. And then I had to learn to ride it. At first, it seemed very fast to someone who had only ridden an ordinary bicycle once before. But I soon got used to it. I fell off once or twice during the first few weeks, but after a while, I felt reasonably confident and rode to work every day, even when it was raining. That is, of course, one of the disadvantages of riding a motorbike in England. To keep dry, you have to dress up in waterproof clothes, which soon get very dirty. And it's cold during winter, too. But my journey to work takes me half an hour less than it used to take me on the train. Traffic jams don't worry me. And I don't have to wait on cold railway platforms for crowded trains. I don't know whether it's any cheaper than public transport, though. I soon got dissatisfied with my small motorbike and bought a bigger, faster, and more expensive one. Number 15. Why did the speaker decide to buy a small second-hand motorbike? Number 16. According to the passage, what does the speaker often need to wear for riding a motorbike? Number 17. Why is the speaker not sure now whether going to work by motorbike is any cheaper than by train?
Passage 3. Few people know that the fate of the most precious document in the history of the United States, the Declaration of Independence, was once entirely in the hands of a young man and an old man. It happened during the War of 1812, when the British invaded Washington and burned the capital. Fearing for the safety of the priceless document, Secretary of State James Monroe gave it to a young man who worked as a clerk of his office, no doubt thinking that the British would never suspect that a harmless-looking man would ever be entrusted with the safety of such a great treasure. As he handed the bag with the important document in it to Stephen Pleasanton, for that was the young man's name, Secretary Monroe said, "I'm entrusting you with the most important document of the United States. It was for this that our brave men fought and died during the Revolutionary War. The British must not get their hands on it." Stephen thrust the pouch which contained the declaration beneath his shirt for safekeeping, and started out in the general direction of Leesburg, Virginia, driving a wagon disguised as a peddler. The second day he had a narrow escape when he ran into a patrol of British soldiers who eyed him and his wagon with suspicion. The leader of the patrol was satisfied with Stephen's story of being a peddler, hurrying home for his family, and let him go. Few have heard of Stephen Pleasanton, but what he did will always be remembered. Number 18. When did the true story take place? Number 19. Where did the young man hide the precious document? Number 20. Which of the following titles is best for the passage?